following interview is with Mr. and Mrs. John and Olive Malloy, taking place at their home in Laurel on April 20th, 1978. John, born in 1891 and Olive, born in 1894, tell about the history of the town of Laurel from their own personal perspective.
Okay, I think quick review here of what we were talking about. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself? Tell me when you were born and your age.
Well, I'm John Malloy. I'm born here on this farm in 1891.
Mm-hmm.
Got married in 1913.
Mm-hmm.
Raised hops for 4 years. We were born and raised in the hop yard. Everybody had hops in this territory around Laurel. Then milk cows. That was our main livelihood.
Mm-hmm.
For a good number of years, and later on in 1927, set out walnut orchard. Then later on, all together set the whole ranch. Now I have 40 acres of filberts and some walnuts. One time there, I had 100 acres of walnuts on this farm. 106 acres in the total farm, 160 a little over.
Mm-hmm. And you're still working on the farm, still active on the farm.
Yeah, a lot of hard work, 3 square meals a day, breakfast and dinner and supper on the farm.
You mentioned before.
I guess the hard work didn't hurt us any.
Yeah. Is that what you contribute your long life to then?
Well, plenty of exercise, plenty of work.
I imagine you
We go a lot of dances, did from 1924 when we built the community hall here at Laurel, and we've been going to dances ever since. You have to have some fun mixed in with your work.
So. And why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself, Mrs. Malloy?
I'm Olive Malloy, and I was born in 94. And then my father came here from Illinois in 1852 and was a blacksmith.
He was 12 years old then.
And he was 12 years old at that time. And quite a lot of Indians here at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And he started out from Illinois with 13 wagons, ox team. And got here with 3. The Indians were quite bad crossing the plains.
Mm-hmm.
Came into Portland. Portland wasn't much at that time. Then he came out here and took up a donation land claim. His father did, and he's lived and died on this farm as a blacksmith.
You were telling me earlier about some of the Indians that lived in this area.
The Indians were here, and one trouble they had with a family by the name of Dillaboy, and they had to surround the house in order to save the family, the neighbors.
And Ball Peak area.
That was here right close to Ball Peak.
The settlers had to surround the house?
Yes,
for
the settlers surrounded the house to protect the family from. He got in trouble over clearing land. Indians was hired to clear land at that time, and he got in trouble with them.
Mm-hmm.
And once you was in trouble with an Indian, you was in trouble. And so the country, what was here, protected him by surrounding the house. And then after that, I don't know how long, the Indians was given the land over at, Grand Round. And that's where they settled eventually.
Mm-hmm.
And
the Indians themselves would clear the land here.
They would work for the whites that was here. And Dillaboy's, in paying them didn't do right thing or something happened and they were in war with him.
Hmm. That was just that one family?
That's just the one family here that had trouble with them mostly, but people were coming in here and taking the land which they were living on. And mm-hmm. as it is of today, they don't like to be chased out of their land.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened at that time. And then my father had several brothers. One of them was a minister. And he started the Christian church. They built a Christian church at what they used to be Farmington.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I was raised. Some I went to school here.
When you were little then, you remember some of the Indians that were still living
here? Yes, I remember a few of them around.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned before you were describing the physical characteristics. Would you
They were a tall. Now there's two different bunch of Indians. The ones that were out north, that was where the Meeks lived, that he came, that Meek family came earlier than that here in this country, and these were a different bunch of Indians and two different kinds, and I don't remember what the name of either one was, but
were they called Calipuyans at that time?
Pardon?
Were they called Calipuyans at that time?
Or? No, I don't remember that. But Meeks had, there was a little different class of Indians than either, but in this place and in the north of Hillsboro.
You say they were moved to the reservation?
Yes, at Grand Round.
They were picked up and moved, or were they just
asked to move? Well, they just eventually were given land over there by the government or somebody, I suppose. The government fixed a place for them. Mm-hmm. And that's where they settled from this location.
You mentioned that although the Dilliboys seemed to have problems, that some of the white settlers got along well with the Indians. Was that the case?
Some did, yeah. Some didn't have any trouble with them. But if you was in trouble with them, you was in trouble.
That's really interesting. Okay, I'd like to switch a little bit back to the Malloy family. You told me earlier about how the Malloy family arrived in this area. Would you mind going over that?
My grandfather, Alfred Malloy, came from Germany when he was 13 years old. Entered somewhere up in the edge of Canada, in the eastern part. And grandmother Malloy came from Ireland when she was 19 years old. And after they were married later on, they settled in Iowa. And he was a blacksmith. Also done a little farming and blacksmith work. In 1871, see, the railroad was completed into Frisco in 69. That's when they drove the Golden Spike, connected the railroad. Well, they came to Frisco on the emigrant train and then boarded an ocean schooner and came to Portland, settled down around Albany. In the year 1871. And so the next spring in 1872, he came up in this locality, Laurel, Oregon, in Washington County, and looked around and homesteaded here. Mm-hmm. Moved here in April of 1872.
Was that his original?
My dad at that time was 12 years old.
Was that your grandfather's original intention when he came to San Francisco to move on up to Oregon?
Well, they came to Frisco and directly up to Portland.
Did you ever hear him say what attracted him to Oregon, or what caused him to come to Oregon?
Only Oregon was, just like everything, it was all the gold, pretty much. A lot of it was to Oregon for settling. Good climate up here and agriculture and so forth. Portland that time in 70 wasn't much of a town either, and they called it in the 47 and 50 along there, Portland was nothing, they called it a stump town. You ever read the history of Portland? Have you ever read the history of Portland?
A little bit, yeah. I'm not familiar with the Stumptown, however.
They call it Stumptown, but they just cut trees down. And it was 47, 48, and 50 along there when Portland was developed and got it going.
Mm-hmm. Your grandfather was German. Did he come up with a lot of other German immigrants at the time?
Never heard him mention much about any other German people at all.
Mm-hmm.
There was no immigration from Germany here. I mean, just I don't know, his family moved into Canada.
I see.
And, when he got married up there, he immigrated down into Iowa, Central States. Mm-hmm. There for a number of years.
Why did he pick this particular area here in Laurel? What attracted him to here?
Well, I wouldn't know that, what attracted him to Laurel.
Gold rush.
Mm-hmm. Gold rush? What? No, the gold rush was, your folks came in the 52. That was a California gold rush in 49-50.
Uh-huh.
But I don't know what
was his original intention farming then when he came out here?
I suppose they thought this would look pretty good, this valley here.
Mm-hmm. Did he ever say what the countryside was like at that time when he came?
Well, it was all more or less timber here, had to be cleared.
Mm-hmm. The clearing operations, did he do the clearing or did they have hired labor coming out here?
They done a lot of the clearing themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Farmed around stumps.
Uh-huh. She mentioned that the Indians did some of the clearing. I also understand sometimes the Chinese would come out and clear land.
My dad, when he was 19 years old, worked up just north of Hubbard, Oregon,
mm-hmm.
On the Hoboken place, and they had Chinese up there that came and camped and cleared a lot of land.
Mm-hmm.
Chinese would do work for them, Chinamen.
Mm-hmm.
That was up, that was over in Hubbard, Oregon. Hubbard just north of Woodburn.
Mm-hmm. They didn't come out to this particular area?
No, they never settled out in this country at work.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when I got married, and a couple of years afterwards, I hired a bunch of, from Portland, of men. They were all Finns, Finland Finns. Do grubbing, clearing land. You could hire contract off a patch of land. They'd clear it. There was some left to be
cleared. What years are we talking about here now?
That's 1915, 16 along there.
Mm-hmm. How would that work? Could you explain that a little? Would you go into Portland?
We went in with a horse and buggy or hack. We had a team, and it'd take us 4 hours to go to Portland, take farm produce. My dad would go in with a butcher hogs and veal and take butter, and that was in the late 90s.
Mm-hmm.
That's when we were living in the old house down there. He built the house up here in 1901, house where I was born. He'd go in and get up about 1 o'clock and strike out about 2 o'clock, get into Portland, and then he'd buy some supplies and get home about 8 or 9 o'clock at night.
Wow.
It's a long day, trip with the team.
Mud roads.
Yeah. Well, they only made them trips in the summertime when the road was dusty.
Mm-hmm. What was the road over into Portland?
Dirt road, just all dirt road.
Was it going up where Highway 219 is now?
Farmington, same road as Farmington.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Farmington Road is same road traveled.
Mm-hmm. You were mentioning the Finns that came out here. Were they immigrants themselves, or were
they
of Finnish stock?
There would be a lot of Finners around in the country hunting work.
Immigrants? Immigrants.
Did they settle here then? No. Some of them buy land?
They were just out men looking for work.
Drifted in.
Then we come the Model T days, 1917, when we got the Fords. Things were a little bit better for traveling then.
Is it running?
Yeah, let it run. Crank it.
Huh. When your grandfather arrived here, and he was a farmer, what was his original crops or produce that he raised? Was it mostly just
potatoes,
to survive?
Potatoes. And they'd kept a few cows. They'd make butter, and they'd haul the butter. And there's a creamery down, this side of Farmington was a creamery. They'd take their milk or cream down there and sell it.
Huh.
Making butter. I can remember that when I was a kid.
Where was this creamery that you would go to?
Well, it's on Farmington Road, just from the junction, about a mile and a half east, right across from the Shumrick farm.
How many people were living out here in this area at that time, before the turn of the century? Was it just a few families?
Well, in the 70s, I don't know, but 1900, there was quite a lot of. We had about 30, 40 kids at school. Of course, we took in quite an area, school here at Laurel.
How about, was there a community in Laurel Wood at that time also?
No, Laurel Wood is over the mountain. That's no connection with Laurel. Yeah.
Just as an aside,
Laurel had two post offices at one time. Mm-hmm. In the early 1900s, I think 1934, along there. Mm-hmm.
I understand your grandfather was the first postmaster in this area?
He was the first postmaster in 79, I believe. And in 86, my dad was made postmaster. Laurel kept before they had a post office at Laurel, they'd come to Grandfather Malloy, they'd go to pick up the mail over the mountain, over Shehalem, somewhere over there. I don't know how to come in with a horse. They'd go and pick up for the mail for all the settlers over here, and they'd come to his house, pick it up. So then in order to get a post office at Laurel and increase people living here, 79, why, they had to get together and have a name for this community. So the old settlers had a meeting at, it was about the Coonrod Williams, just first ranch north of the Laurel store. And they called it Laurel after the Laurel tree, Madrone tree, is called Laurel tree.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it happened to be called Laurel.
Well, mail.
And then we had a post office.
Mm-hmm. Mail service must have been quite important then. Was that your only contact with the outside world at that time?
Once a week.
Yeah, most of the contact with the world was with mail.
Mm-hmm. Was it, was it correspondence with relatives or newspapers or the type?
Newspapers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That must have really been the lifeblood then of communication. Today we have all the modern conveniences of TV and news and programs, but
you know everything that happened all over the whole world today.
You got mail once a week.
Yeah, first once a week, then they got mail twice a week. Then later on, six or seven more mail, they got mail every day, rural mail carriers.
Okay, back to some of the crops that were raised on this farmland. I understand the original ones were like grain. You mentioned potatoes. I understand that hops were a big thing in this area. Could you tell me a little bit about how they started?
Yeah, along in the 1900s or in the late 90s and all through there, this area, all over Washington County was quite a bit hop yards. Pretty every ranch had a hop yard, small. There was some down in the Reedville area, and out on Cornell Road some large acreage, as much as 100 and 200 acre hop yard. Most of the hops always grow to around Salem and Independence. That's in Oregon. That's mm-hmm. the main hop section. And people would come out from town, from Hillsboro and Portland, and we had camps for them, and be about 2 weeks on the farm, pick hop pickers. I know we'd, our hop crew was always 35 or 40 pickers, mm-hmm. the size of our crew.
Some of these pickers, I understand, were Chinese, is that right?
No, they were all local people, mm-hmm. town people from Hillsboro and Portland, the hop pickers were. Mm-hmm.
Why do you think hops were such a big, you know, big farm thing? Why was it? Was this land especially suited for hops?
Well, it was, yeah, it was really adapted good for hops. Mm-hmm.
What happened to the hop?
Well, when the World War One, most all piled up, and they had to raise beans for the government, forced you to raise beans for the Army, Navy beans, for everybody, and help was scarce and so forth. Mm-hmm. And everybody more or less went out of it and developed more into dairying. This country then was getting more into dairy business. Mm-hmm. The Shale Mountain was pretty noted for potato growing, but they had mountain Burbanks, they always called them. The buyers would seem to like to get hold of the mountain potatoes.
How about black caps? Were they grown in this area?
Well, later on, the black cap industry come along in 1920, later than that, 1930s and 40s, along there with berries. Mm-hmm. And canneries developed in Hillsboro. The Bird's Eye was built there in, I don't know just what year, let's see. I think that was built in the 1930s, somewhere along there.
You mentioned after hops, dairy became quite the industry or the farm crop.
Well, in 1903 or 4, the organized businessmen of Hillsboro built a condenser. That's what spurted up the dairy business in Washington County. Built condenser. That's where the dog food plant is now, on the railroad. Mm-hmm. That was in 1903 and 4, along there.
Did that help?
In the later years, and they sold out to Carnation Milk Company, you know, mm-hmm. larger outfit.
Just because of the fact that Hillsboro had that condensery there, did that help the
that
city of Hillsboro?
That stimulated the dairy business all over Washington County. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they had pick up teams and haul the milk in, trucked in by wagons, milk wagons. Mm-hmm. Teams, different milk routes.
Did that help the growth of the city of Hillsboro there?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, it was a good industry. Mm-hmm. You got something like that, and we got a milk check. Well, I think we got a milk check once a month, yeah. And that helped out, you know, when you get a check. People go to town, mm-hmm. spend more money, buy more.
Mm-hmm. Something that I find interesting that I don't know too much about is something called the Milk War. What was
it? I know all about the Milk War. Alexander's got the tape on that the Bill of Rights with the Argus. Mm-hmm.
Could you tell a little bit about it for our benefit? Just a little bit about what it was?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. In year 29 or 30, the dairymen, we were shipping the milk, more grade A milks going into Portland, and the processing plants wouldn't recognize farmers were organized what they call dairy co-op, cooperative, to sell their milk and handle their business. And the dairymen are the different creameries and distributors in Portland. They wouldn't have anything to do with dairy co-op, mm-hmm. no way, shape or form. So then on, this was 31, August, latter part of August, they decided we had been hired a man from Seattle, or up in that neighborhood, Washington, Will Henry was manager, and he was a good one. And so on, Henry couldn't get no satisfaction and agree to do business with the dairy co-op. No, they're going to just pay the dairymen themselves, and they wanted to test our milk and cheat us a little. Why, that was up to them. So, and we had plenty of that going on, and the dairymen knew it. So we had a milk war. Started on a Saturday morning, and all dairymen, we got busy, went to Portland, had a meeting, I think it was on Thursday night, and no, it was on Friday night. And Saturday we used to notify all dairymen to keep their milk at home, or dump it out, or separate it. You know, you had a separator, you could separate and make cream. So it's a creamery, you know, so you didn't have to dump it. Well, on Saturday we was out dumping milk. Any milk going into Portland, us dairymen was out on different roads leading to Portland, any trucks, and we dumped the milk that was headed for Portland.
You just Shanghai the truck then? Or?
Yeah, we Shanghai the truck, hijacked them, take their load of milk and dump it. Yeah. Well, one thing that made it good for the farmers, the dairymen, Julius Meyer, Meyer and Frank, was governor, and John Connell was the sheriff of Washington County. And this was coming up, so Julius Meyer had told the state police to lay off the farmers, and so the patrolman, police would tell us, now if we see you doing something unlawful, dumping milk, why don't get into an argument with us, just say, all right, get in your cars and go on down the road. And he says, what happens a mile down to that trucker down the road don't make any difference to us. So they was on our side. And John Connell, the sheriff, he, on Sunday night, they said he got out on a soapbox on the corner of the street, and he hooped it up and told the farmer, the dairyman, to go to it. So we had the law, the dairyman had the law on their side, you know, mm-hmm. free going. So they sent a truck out to Carnation, it was a big operator in Portland, that was Riverview Dairy. They sent a truck out to the condenser here in Hillsborough, condensed milk, you know, that was grade C milk. And they loaded up a tank truck. So it got down to Beaver. I wasn't in on that, but some of my buddies from West Union knew all about it. And they dumped it in a whole, I guess about a 500 tank truck, right where the Cedar Hills Boulevard, the green light, as you go to Taunton Valley Highway. Mm-hmm. They caught it on that corner and they dumped it, and the milk run in the filling station on the corner and down the street just a little ways with the house, and then milk run in their basement. She was terrible upset. Alpen Rose on Sunday morning, Alpen Rose boy would pick up just out on Bertha Beaverton at the edge of Beaverton, so we run him in the ditch and dump his cans of milk he had. He had pick up load and dump them, and then let them go on. They knowed we meant business. Well, on it went along for Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. We were out dumping milk, and on Tuesday at I think it was 2 o'clock, they gave in and signed contracts with Dairy Co-op, and everything was going good in the Dairy Co-op. Well, they had a skim plant first, and then later on they built a plant over on East 12th and Main, and that facility is there, and later they grew. Why, they went out on their present site now, out there by Powell on 8th, is where the Dairy Co-op.
So the
Nutella, but it wouldn't be good to do that, Alpenrose.
Just a minute.
I can tell you a little about Alpenrose. You shut her off. Cans of Milk was out on the stand, Flint's bar in there, and he was going by to, down on Taylor's Ferry where we had gathered, and that was on that Monday morning. And Eddie says, I turned them upside down, and he's the one. And so Flint, the next day after the milk war on Tuesday and Wednesday, he went down to Whitewashy Barn, and Harry Flint, he was just, oh, the man, he wasn't in with the Dairy Co-op, he wouldn't join. And that was awful. They dumped my milk, and he didn't have no use for them. And Eddie said, I says, oh, yes, that's awful. And he said, I had to lap up my sleeve. I was the guy that dumped his milk.
So the milk war then was a solid victory for the farmers.
Yeah, that was, it was a victory for the dairymen, all right. That started them in business, and they've been growing ever since. Mayflower Dairy is. Dairy started from Dairy Co-op. Well, you got the history pretty well with the milk war.
Yeah. Okay, well, changing a little bit here.
I shouldn't mention any of our neighbors' names.
They're all dead now.
Well, speaking of your neighbors, I'm curious. There must have been quite a close tie among the neighbors themselves.
Yeah, they were. Mm-hmm.
Was this in part due to the same thing, being a farmers, or I imagine the church really had a strong influence on the people. Could you talk a little bit about the churches in this area?
Pardon?
Could you talk a little bit about the churches in this area and how they got their start? Their importance, maybe?
Here down the church.
The what?
The church at the cemetery here.
Well, this cemetery, Mount Olive Cemetery, my grandfather donated Alfred Molloy 2 acres for a cemetery. In 1878, they built a Baptist church here. And they had, well, different ministers, and that's where we went to Sunday school. And then later on, about 1903 or 4, evangelical group built a church at Laurel, where the present site of where the church is now. It burnt in 47 or 48, about 48, it burnt down. They built a new church. But this here, and that cemetery was organized then, and then in 31, cemetery, my dad, they incorporated, and they had, in 1904, bought 3 acres more. That's Mount Olive Cemetery.
Did all the people in this area attend the same church then, or?
Well, pretty much, yeah. And then faded away, consolidated more in the church at Laurel. There wasn't enough groups to keep 2 congregations going.
And all the farming communities here in Washington County and surrounding areas, there always seems to be churches immediately built. You think a lot of the people's Christians' beliefs helped them with their farm activities, or really affected their lives and their will to work and work hard. In other words, was the church, their Christian beliefs are really a strong factor in their lives, you see.
Well, they probably were.
Kept them together,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Some of your neighbors, I heard once that there were some Japanese farmers out in this area. Is that
well,
right?
Well, you know, the Japanese came over here. That was before World War II in the 30s. They were great strawberry growers. You know, there was a lot of Japanese farmers in this area. They rent quite a large acreage and raised strawberries.
Mm-hmm. Here in the Laurel area?
Yeah, in the Laurel area. Shale Mountain, all around.
Do you remember any of the Japanese families, or was there much contact with
them? Well, so, what's his name? He lived just a mile up here. He's a doctor in Portland, the boy. He went to school with our daughter. What was it? Inahara was he was quite a, just up a mile above us here.
Did these Japanese families that came, were they came directly from Japan, or were they coming
well,
from
think,
somewhere
no,
else?
No, I think they, the old folks probably did, but they had settled here and raised their children was all born here. Mm-hmm. Tosho, I understand he's quite a prominent doctor in Portland. That's the son of Inahara.
Huh.
Tosho Inahara.
During World War II, were a lot of the Japanese farmers moved?
I mean,
were they relocated?
They had a kind of a, government drew a kind of a string onto them, huh? They had a line to follow.
Did, what was the feelings among the other people that lived in this
well,
area? Did they think that was fair or unfair?
Any hard feeling among the Japanese then on account of the war, I don't think so. Mm-hmm. They were all pretty nice. They were nice to guy, but they said this here, he went to Japan every year and the money he'd make here, he'd took a lot of it over to help his country, home country out, you know, or help his relatives at home. Mm-hmm. This Inahara. Well, I didn't know. There was some up north, Japanese farming up west of Laurel. Birdseye rented a cannery. They rented a lot of land around here for berries for a good number of years all over this mountain.
Mm-hmm.
Birdseye cannery.
Did the Japanese come back after the war then to this area, or did they?
Yeah, they never left here.
They was no trouble,
did they? Only they kept a good line, know what they were doing. They weren't forced to, out of here. Mm-hmm. They could continue right with their work.
How about during the Depression years? Did some of the migrant laborers come through here? The people down from Oklahoma and Arkansas, did they help work out in the farms?
From the Dakotas, there was a lot of them blowed out here in the 30s. Mm-hmm. That windstorm back there, dust storm, and blowed out and they come to Oregon. And
did they buy up land in this area, or are they just workers mainly?
Well, most of them are just workers. Some of them acquired land.
Okay, I was reading that one book on Laurel, and it was talking about some of the recreational activities, some of the things that people at Laurel did for fun. It mentioned a baseball team. Was there quite a baseball team in this area?
Oh yeah, in the 1910, 11, 12, 13, up to 15, in the teens, Laurel had a good ball team. Had a ball diamond. Possibly a church down there, and pasture grounds, didn't have to pay any rent on them. That was quite a attraction. Different localities, like Farmington had a ball team, Sherwood had a ball team. I never played with Tiger, but Sherwood did. Kenton had a ball team, Farmington had a ball team, Laurel had a ball team, and they exchanged games around. Reedville, remember we got Laurel. And Gaston, when we first married, went over to Gaston one son-in-law beat him over there. I think it was 3-2. Good game.
Did rivalries develop between the towns?
Pardon?
Did rivalries develop among
them? Oh, no. It's all fun.
Mm-hmm. Was it local boys that played on the team?
Yeah, just local farm boys. Either working boys were young fellows working for the farmers, and some of the young farmers married and the good ball players themselves. There was a lot of married. Bill Ziegler, Walt Mullen, John Wills, Frank Whitmore, they were all married. And Edinburgh Holder. Huh. Leonard Stark, maybe you know Leonard Stark. He used to be the first baseman. Leonard Stark, he lived at Progress and owned that place right where Datsun is. He sold off to Datsun. Mm-hmm. Did you know Leonard?
I didn't personally know.
He's a. No, Stark Hill is that horseshoe bend between Shoals Store and going to Six Corners. You know that horseshoe bend where you go around?
Yeah.
That's Stark Hill. That's where you just round. And, well, he's just on this side of there. He bought. Come back and bought 6 acres up on that side hill there with several houses.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think baseball was so popular? Was it a national sport or was it the main sport?
Among the just the localities here, them days, you know, when they got into early days, you didn't have any way of traveling, only a horse and buggies and horse traveling.
Make their own amusement.
Yeah, you had to have your own amusement. You couldn't go with them. And later on, they got, when the Model T come into existence, then they began to travel around a little farther away.
Speaking of amusements, I understand there was a band out here, a musical band.
Yeah, that was World War One, 1917, along there.
Mr. Hambert.
Quite a band.
Mr. Hambert.
Yeah, they played, Newburgh, 4th of July, Hillsborough, Patriotic Doings, one thing or another.
Your leader.
Huh?
Hambert.
Well, Granville Amherst was he lived up west of Laurel on a farm. He was originally from Newburgh. Mm-hmm. He was the band leader.
Were you a member of the band there?
Well, I was in, but I never, I could make a tune on a clarinet, but I wasn't too hot a player. I wasn't a musician too much.
Well, you went with them all.
Oh, yeah, I went with them.
How about the Bald Peak Mountain here, was that a picnic area that people would go to?
That was a picnic area when I was a kid. Yeah, people would walk there, and that was quite popular.
Because, yeah.
Back in the early 1900s.
What all can you see up there from there, of the sites and major points?
Years ago, early 1900, you could see it was all Bald Peak. Now it's grown up with timber around there, but then it was just, you could claim you could see 17 counties, Salem, Mackinac, all over that. How it got a name, Bald Peak. It was really bald, but now all that timber growed up down there that cuts off your view, you know. Mm-hmm.
But you could see 17 counties.
Huh.
One time.
Now, something that you mentioned that you're involved in is dances. Is that dancing? Was that something big or something that people around here did? Was there a dance hall that you went to here in Laurel?
Well, our community hall was built in 1924 and began a dance every other Saturday night in Laurel. And just the community get together and add other things, plays, and different programs, school programs,
literary
at our hall for amusement. Mm-hmm.
What is this literary society? I've heard something about that they had in Shoals. What exactly is that?
Well, we had a literary society here when we married here, school.
What is a literary society?
Well, you'd have spelling down and meet in the evening once in 2 weeks or at the schoolhouse and spelling down, typing down, and debates. and put on a little program, you know, either a dialogue or some solos, singing, and quartets, and duets, music.
How about these debates? Were there some pretty lively debates that went on down there?
Oh yeah, we had really lively debates.
And they had
two brothers, Roy Heineck and Neil and Urban Heineck, and boy, they really got right hot in the collar. The two brothers, but they had one on one side, one another, debating. So, had some pretty good debate on some pretty good questions.
Do you remember any particular evening or debate that was especially?
Nobody got into. Really, too bad, but they get kind of huffy at one another.
I don't remember what they would debate on.
Oh, I don't know what they debate on.
Different things.
I always had three judges.
Were they some political topics of the day, or
some of them
different issues coming up them all in them days. You had to make your own amusement out in a country like this.
Communities hung together, you know. And
Shoals and Laurel always worked together pretty good. Yeah. The communities here.
Okay. Something that I read in the Hillsborough Argus article, mm-hmm. It was talking about a particular incident that happened to you back in September of 1911. Saying that you had a little horse and buggy accident. Is that quite a incident?
Even more.
Well, that was just north of Laurel where that creek is. I was taking Olive home here. Walter Robinson, his girlfriend, was first ranch east of Laurel. He'd taken her, and we'd been to a hop yard to a watermelon feed. When they finished hop picking, they always had a watermelon feed in the evening. Mm-hmm. And we'd been there, it was about 10:30, 11 o'clock. I'd taken her home, I was headed south. It was a plank road then, it was a plank. And he lived at Farmington, and our wheels locked like that. Broke my shafts out, and my
horse
went down the creek.
I
hung on to my horse, his horse got away. That ain't in that law book, is it?
I think it is.
Is it?
Yeah.
Might have been.
Huh. So even before cars, they would have accidents on the horses.
Runaways and everything.
I started going to you in 19 May 1911. That was in September. I'll pick them the ways over the middle of
the horses passed one another.
Single horse, you know, and the wheel just locked. The horses went by. Yeah, a little black buggy horse, and I had a little gray. We hit that plank road, boy, we were really going. It drove me over and hit the corner and kind of banged me up for a little while, but I hung on to my horse. I had her to lead home, but his horse was out of way.
Went down to my home.
Yeah. He found her open space about an acre by their house. Oh, it was in old days.
They had races those days, too.
My buggy went down the creek, my brother up me the next morning, went down and we pulled it out. And get a new pair of shafts.
Huh. How about, you say you were courting Olive over here at the time. Was that common, the farm boys to marry the local farm girls?
Oh, yeah. Usual affair. Mm-hmm. That's the way most of them paired up around here. And in our younger days, it was a large number of young couples around here together. And even after we'd married, we'd have house parties.
Chivalries.
About every Saturday night. One house and then another, you know, just party games. That's what we had a hall to, you know, to gather in, just house parties.
Would you know the girl or the boy that you ended up marrying all your life then, or had contact with him?
Mostly. His folks and my folks were neighbors, you know.
No, there's a lot of couples paired up around here, just like our age.
Did sometimes the parents pick out some girl on the block or on the?
No, the parents didn't have nothing to do with it.
Oh, some of them did once in a while.
They would just steer their children in the right direction.
Right.
When that girl would go with this guy and go with her or something. Yeah, I mean, it was on their own.
How about people once they, some of the farm children when they grow up, did most of them stay in this area or would they leave the city of Laurel altogether or move on?
You take in the early days, they stayed pretty much to the farm, you know. Some ones get married, they'd start out on farming. Mm-hmm. Or some of them would work on a farm and they get a chance to get started on their own. More so than that today, there isn't anybody. Young ones starting much on a farm today, they're leaving.
Mm-hmm. They couldn't get starved to death.
But years ago, they got married and they'd either take a job working for a farmer until they get started and so they can start in for themselves. You didn't have to have too much finances. You know, a team of horses and a plow and a drag harrow and a you're in business.
They set up on their father's land, or would they buy their own land of their own?
Well, sometimes on their home place, or else buy some land.
How expensive was land? Was that a great deal?
You could buy any land from $25 to $50 an acre.
Just as an interesting sidelight, just right up here in Bald Peak, they were selling 5 acres for $25,000. This past month.
My ranch here, they just sold here a week or two ago. There's 18 acres. They'd sold 10 acres off. So Eldon's stepson, I sold it to the guy that worked for us so many years, and him and his married brother. His brother lives in the upper house here. That's 70 acres, and they sold off 35 down to the section line. They sold a 5-acre tract for 2,000 acres, and then they sold 10 acres off for 3,000 acres, that's 30,000. So they just sold here a couple weeks ago. There was 18 acres left in the middle, right up here top of the hill. They sold it 4,000 an acre. That's 70.
These are.
They give me. I sold it in 67 to them for 44,000. The whole thing, 70 acres. They. See, they've sold off $112,000 worth and got 35 acres left.
Huh.
When
this land is sold, is it for houses or is it continued farmland?
No, it's just for housing. Mm-hmm. It all worked out.
It's a viewpoint.
Yeah. Well, we're getting into this. What do you see as the future of this area, the Laurel area? Do you see it, the farmland disappearing?
Oh yeah, still there's plenty of farmland left, but the hill, that's where they seem to want to go so they have a view.
Right.
Up here these mountains are all just full of houses everywhere, back in the woods. It's surprising how they, up Holly Hill. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, let's see. I think that's about all the planned questions I have.
Yeah, here. I'm giving you quite a little, don't
you? Yeah, I found it interesting that you lived on the farm and worked on the farm and you're...
We went to school together.
Mm-hmm. Looks like you two are just hopping around like a couple of spring chickens still.
Yeah. We go to dance and don't sit down. We get up and we're dancing all the time, never miss a one. No, we know so many people. We go in 42, started going to Portland. And we know everybody, you might say, goes to dances around there. We figure a bunch of in the hall.
Uh-huh.
Never get to dance. Always somebody, we dance one just for. Changes one couple, one dance about all. You never get around to dance. Always somebody you don't dance with that night. Well, you catch them up the next time.
Yeah. Oh, in closing, this might finally sound a little trite, but do you have any advice for us youngins, just in general? You obviously have seen quite a few changes through the years and growing up on a farm.
I don't know. I have no advice for these youngins.
Okay, I thank you.
Yeah, you always said that hard work didn't hurt anybody.
Yeah, around Tiger, we get quite a few dancers from down there. Mm-hmm. Some from King City, from the Hillsboro. We come tomorrow night. Plays Hillsboro Grange Hall, 8:30 to 12:00. Mm-hmm. Then Monday afternoon she plays Hillsboro at center, and then next Monday will be Lower Grange Hall, back and forth. Mm-hmm. And alternate they do.
Okay, well, thank you. Okay, we were talking about the Indians, and you said that you were talking about moving the Indians over to Grand Ronde, but you said that you do remember some of the Indians.
Yes, they were more of a tall, raw-boned Indians. They were pretty husky, as I remember.
Mm-hmm.
And then they settled them over there, and then they didn't have much trouble. My father was a blacksmith, and they were quite friendly with the Indians. Mm-hmm. If you once you have a friend with them, you're always a friend. Mm-hmm. Once they trust you.
Mm-hmm. Was there a group or a tribe in this area?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There was a different tribe over toward Hillsboro Country North. And these were a little different than them. There was, I can't remember what tribes they were. But out where the Meeks were was a different tribe than this, at this location.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Just as a background information, how old are you? What time period are we talking about here? Or how long have you been in
this area? We're talking here, when I remember the Indians, I was about 6 years old, mm-hmm. when I can still...
I'm going to be about 1900.
Yeah.